Bloodshed, massacre, assassination. In the name of religion. The Buddhism has not been violent in some areas. It was the most violent religion when it spread to Japan, you know. Even Buddhism. Those temples maintained armies and provided armies to fight battles in Japan. That's history, not my personal opinion. That's why I'm saying, emphasizing that the teachers and the teachings are responsible for this mess in this world. All those messiahs have created nothing but mess in this world. And the politicians are the inheritors of that culture. There's no use blaming them and calling them corrupt. They were corrupt. The man who taught love was corrupt because he created division in his consciousness. Who talked of love thy neighbor as thyself was responsible for this horror in the world today. If you want to call this a horror, don't exonerate those teachers. The teachings have created nothing but mess in this world. Progressively moving in the direction of destroying not only man, but every kind of species on this planet today. You know? So it came out of that. Not these scientists, not these politicians that are responsible. Luckily they have this power in their hands, they are going to use it, you see. There are enough lunatics in this world who will press the button, but it originated there, progressively moving in the direction. So religion is not going to save man. Nor atheism, nor communism, nor any of those systems. They are all the religions. See, it originated there. So you can't put them on a pedestal and say that they should be exonerated. You see, they are not only the teaching, but the teachers themselves have sowed the seeds of this violence that we have in this world. The man who talked of love is responsible because love and hate go together. So how can you exonerate them? Don't blame the followers. The followers have come out of the teaching. That history is not my personal opinion. You know the history of Europe, you see, the Inquisition, see, in the name of Jesus. Why do you want to revive that religion? What for? Back to Christianity is the slogan now everywhere. I'm not condemning any particular thing. All are responsible for it. So talk of love is one of the most absurd things. There must be two. Wherever there is a division, there is, you see, this destruction. Kindness. Two, you are kind to somebody or you are kind to yourself. There is a division there in your consciousness. Anything that is born out of the division is a protective mechanism, and in the long run it is destructive. It is trying to protect itself. The thought is protecting itself. That is why it is interested in continuity. The body is not interested in protecting itself. Whatever intelligence that is necessary for the survival of the body is already there. So the jungle we have created through our organization needs that intellect, you see. The intellect that we have acquired through our studies, through our culture, through the whole lot. It has a parallel existence of its own and it is interested in the survival of a different kind. Because there is no end to the life here. This is only an expression of the life. If you and I go, the life goes on. You see, if those lights go, you see, the electricity is there. So something else will come. It's not interested, you see, in man. Man unfortunately has such destructive powers which has resulted out of the original experience of the man, the self-awareness. So the whole talk of wanting to be, you see, to look at himself, to understand himself is, you see, a divisive moment in man, born out of the self-awareness. That's the foundation on which the whole psychological structure is built.
But how can we get rid of this defeated thinking?
You can't. Yeah. Not in your hands. Anything you do adds momentum to that. So do you want that to come to an end? No.
I once felt an enormous unity.
Yes, that is. That's what they feel also, you know, when they do meditation, when they do tapas. Oneness. The disturbance of in the metabolism of the body. Brought about through drugs or through meditation or through any of those systems and techniques man has invented, you can experience the oneness of life, you see, the unity of life. And look at India, which preached the unity of life and the oneness of life. There you have an example. They talk, you know, they are all great metaphysicians, you know, philosophers. Everlastingly we discuss this thing, but it doesn't operate in the lives of the people.
The understanding that there is that dualism, that understanding, that the common of this
understanding is dualism. If the division is not there, there is nothing to understand. So the instrument which you are using to understand something is the only instrument you have. There is no other instrument. You can talk of intuition, you can talk of thousand and other things. They are all sensitized thoughts. So the intuition is nothing but a sensitized thought, but still it is a thought. So anything you understand through the help of that instrument has not helped you to understand anything. So that is not the instrument and there is no other instrument. If that is the case, is there anything to understand? So your understanding anything is only for the purpose of changing what is there. Whatever is there, you want to change. So by understanding this, you want to bring about a change. Change not what is there, but change in the structure of your thinking. So you begin to think differently and you begin to experience differently. But basically, there is no change there. So you are wanting to understand anything is only for the purpose of bringing about a change there. And at the same time, you do not want the change. So that has created the neurotic situation in man, wanting two things, change and no change. So that is the conflict that is there all the time. Wanting to change everything. Huh? What's that?
Also, now to see that conflict from kind of other level than thinking.
The seeing itself is a divisive moment. There are two things. You know, in the Indians are past masters in this game. Seer and the seen, the observer and the observed. You know, they are great experts in this kind of a game, you know. But what is there to see? Who is it that is seeing? Are there two things? What do you do when you see? We are back again to the same thought, you know. It's like you are trying to look at it is absurd, you see, to talk of posing yourself the question of who am I? That has become, you see, the basic teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Who am I? That means, why do you ask that question, who am I? That means there is some other I there you want to know. I don't know. The question to me has no meaning at all. The very fact that you ask that question, who am I, implies that there are two things. The I you know, there is another I, the nature of which you do not know. So you will be better off by asking the question and get an answer, if you can, about what you know. The question, who am I, implies that there is some other I, the nature of which you really do not know and you want to know. I don't know if I make myself. Do you know anything about yourself, first of all? What do you know? Tell me. What he has been told, where he lives, what his name is, how much money he is drawing. Every month, and his telephone number, how many people he has met, you see, how many experiences he has gathered during the course of his 30 years. That's all that he can tell. You see, all the books he has read, he can repeat mechanically. All the information he has gathered and all the experiences he has collected. So that is all that is there. Why you are dissatisfied with it and why you are searching for something other than that? Can you tell me something about yourself? Other than the information that you gather, what you know.
What I found there is not the answer.
What? No, what did you find there?
Knowledge. Knowledge.
So that question, that idiotic question, is born out of the knowledge you already have. So this is the knowledge that is there that has thrown up this question, who am I? So you want to know, and through that knowing, the knowledge you have gathers momentum. You are adding more and more and more. If there is anything to be known there, what all you know should come to an end. So by this pursuit, you see, or the demand to get an answer for that question, you are adding more and more to the knowledge. So don't you see the absurdity of the question? Who am I? It doesn't matter who suggested that, who threw that question at you, who recommended that question. There is nothing there to know. What is there is all that you know. When that is not there, there is no need for you to know anything, and there is no way of knowing anything about what is there.
But who am I is not really a question.
It's a statement.
Who am I is a point.
Yes. Where does it lead you, the pointer? All right, if it is a pointer, what you do? You stay put there, and instead of following that, you suck the finger. I'm not, you see, trying to be rude or anything. See, what do you do with that pointer?
The pointer points to where there is no nothing to be pointed.
Yes.
Who am I takes you off. These are all nonsensical words.
That's all that I, this question itself is a nonsensical question.
Yes. But it is only so if you use it as a question.
All right. Even if you use it as a pointer, the very direction is wrong.
It's not even a pointer.
Then, all right, what is it then?
It shows you that you are. It shows you that I am. I am is.
I am is the knowledge I have about my
knowledge. I am is what I am.
But what does it mean? What I am?
It doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
I am is not knowledge.
There is nothing there, no existence there.
Right.
Independent of the question.
Right.
Yes.
So it is the end of knowledge.
So the question should end. Because the question itself, listen, the question itself is born out of the knowledge, out of the answer. Otherwise, there is no place for any question of any kind. All questions are born out of the answers you already have. So, it is idiotic even to ask a question for which you already have an answer. Well, there can't be any question without an answer. It implies, the question implies that there is something about you, about that I you do not know or you want to know, something other than the I that is already there. There is another I.
On a certain level, yes. You can also say if you ask a question, it means that you know the answer.
Otherwise, there is no question at all. There can't be any question without knowledge. Because all questions are born out of the answers you already have. So that is the reason why, you see, a question of that kind, whether it is posed by yourself or somebody, does not want an answer for that question. The answer for any question is the end of the question. The end of the question means the end of the answer that you already have. Not only your answer, the answers that have been accumulating for centuries mustn't be there. So the demand for an answer to that question on any level, there is only one level, there are no other levels, implies that the questioner does not want the knowledge to come to an end.
Quite so. True.
Yes.
But of course, in the process of this,
that has to happen now, not at the end.
Yeah.
Because there is no time. You see, the instrument which you are using, which is this process of knowledge, does not want to come to an end. That is why it is posing the question to itself. Knowing very well that the question is bound to tarry on until it gets an answer. So, this knowledge, which the instrument which you are using, does not know or cannot conceive of the possibility of anything happening except in time. Because it's born in time and it functions in time, although it projects, you see, a state of timelessness, it is not interested in accepting the fact that nothing can happen except in the field of time. The question implies that there is a demand for an answer, and that answer can come only in time. And during that time, see, this has a chance of survival. So anything that is born in the field of time is time.
Yes.
The question is time.
The question is not born in time.
But then, where does it come from?
Come from I am.
That is, I am. That assumption itself is time. That I am.
I am
the experience. Of course. Of course it is an assumption. That there is something there other than this knowledge. What is there is only the knowledge.
Mind?
I don't know what is called. See, to me there is no mind at all, you see. The mind is the totality. Now, it's not that I'm giving a peculiar definition of mind. The totality of your experiences and the totality of your thoughts. As I was saying yesterday, there is no thoughts which you can call your own. There is no experiences which you can call your own. See, without knowledge, you cannot have any experience. I don't know if I make myself clear. So, every time you experience through the help of this knowledge, the knowledge is strengthened and fortified. See, this is a vicious circle. It goes on and on and on and on. The knowledge gives you experiences, and the experiences fortify the knowledge you have. The questions which you are asking are very frivolous questions, because the questions are born out of the knowledge. So if there is any answer to that question, it is not necessarily your answers, the answers that have been accumulating through centuries, you see. So there is a totality of the knowledge that has been accumulating, cumulative knowledge, cumulative experiences. Are there. You are using them to communicate to yourself and to communicate to others. So, there is no such thing as your mind and my mind, but there is a mind which is the totality of all the thoughts and experiences of all that has existed up to this point. I don't know if I make myself clear. So, any answer that anybody gives for that question should put an end to that question. The fact that the answers given by others and the answers that you have manufactured for yourself are the answers that these wise men we have around us is in the marketplace today, and those who existed in the past, let's not bother about those who existed in the past, are not really the answers. So any answer I give to your question cannot be the answer for that question, because the answer should put an end to the question. So if the question is shattered there, along with it, all the knowledge that is responsible for that question has also to go. I don't know if I make myself clear. So the questioner is not interested in any answer, because the answer has to blow up the whole thing. Not only what little you have known, you see, in these 30, 40 years, all that has accumulated up to that point, everything that every man thought and felt and experienced before, up to the point where the question is thrown out. I don't think I'm making myself clear. But anyway, you see, the answer, if there is any answer, should wipe out the whole thing. All that the great.
I was thinking of the despair that occurs when a vacuum is on the brink of becoming a reality, or seemingly near.
Yes, but all right, assuming for a moment that there is despair there. You say you are in great despair. So, have you given up trying to free yourself from despair? You call it despair, like the way you are using the word vacuum, emptiness. But there is no despair there, because there is a movement in the direction of wanting to be free from that situation you call despair. Just the way the existentialist philosophers have built up a tremendous philosophical structure on what it is, what they call despair. But you see, or the religious people call it divine despair. You see, these are all meaningless phrases. But you have never come to grips with what you call despair, because there is already a movement in the direction of wanting somehow to free yourself from the situation which you call despair. So you don't let that despair act. That is the action that I'm talking about. So you are still thinking about, you see that, you know, where is that despair? It's not in the area of your thinking. It should be here in the framework of your body. So where is that despair you are talking about? As long as you are trying, you see, to run away, move away from the despair, there is no despair there. So wanting to be free from despair is all that you are interested in, because you think it is not choking you. It is not killing you, you see. You know, the despair should destroy, you see, this movement for freeing yourself from despair. I am not saying that it is, or it is, then you are not giving a chance for the despair to act. So you are interested in finding out a solution, a way out of this impasse, you see, or impasse, I don't know what you call it. That's all that is there, and you give a name and call it, you see, despair. You are not in despair, you see. You don't act like a man or a person in despair. You just talk about despair, you talk about vacuum, you talk about emptiness. It's not really empty, you see. If there is emptiness, that's the action of life. Life is, then you will ask me, what is life? If I define life, we are lost. It's one definition against life. You see, what exactly I mean by life is that what makes it possible for the whole of your being to respond, not react to this, respond. Respond to this, to the stimuli around you. So if there is no life there, you become a corpse, a dead corpse. A dead corpse cannot respond the way it is responding, but it is still responding in a different way.